why are we doing all of this? It's the future. It's the sustainability of human life on this planet. We're now moving to a renewable world where we can't make the sun shine more brightly. We can't make the wind blow harder. And that's where the data comes in.
I think that actually we're starting to see other marketplaces that have never really been engaged in the energy industry, and it's kind of been left to the energy suppliers. I think other markets are now starting to recognize that they can access energy data. It's a really powerful way to add another level of engagement to your customer base.
We're still trying to drive that forward and make a difference using the data from smart meters and other parts of the industry to encourage innovation, to encourage service, to encourage better energy use. That's the whole point of digital energy. That's the whole point of smart meters.
There is an unknown amount that can still be done with digital energy and energy data. It's not just for the energy suppliers, and there are lots of startups that want to use it for other things.
Horrible as it sounds, we need to take advantage of the awareness that's been created through the energy crisis and to build on that education, to provide these new services to address climate change and to drive the change forward.
What do you think's next?
It's a really interesting question.
Welcome to the Energy Matters podcast. I'm Tom Woolley, Smart Energy Director at SMS, and I'm here with Matt Roderick, and we're going to talk about energy data, why it matters, and why we should care about it. So, Matt, would you like to talk to us about your background?
Yeah, morning, Tom. Thanks. So, I'm relatively recent into the energy industry. I joined the energy industry in 2013. I was CTO, so Chief Technology Officer, for a company called DCC. So for those who don't know about it, the DCC is the organization behind the smart meter rollout that we see going on in the country. So I spent 5 years there. Got a little bit frustrated, as you could imagine, with government entities. Then I founded a company called Energy, N3RGY, that's spelt. So Energy was really around bringing data from smart meters, unsurprisingly, to the wider market, to innovators within the energy sector. So really to try and drive the energy sector forward, to try and drive innovation, to try and drive activities. That's now part of the SMS group, as you know. And we're still trying to drive that forward and make a difference using the data from smart meters and other parts of the industry to encourage innovation, to encourage service, to encourage better energy use and more successful. And obviously as part of decarbonisation and net zero, which data is a fundamental part of.
Great. I think what's interesting is, so I started in the energy industry around the same sort of time, but from the other end. So I started in the metering world, in the smart metering world, working for a company manufacturing the smart electricity and gas meters, and then the communication hubs that are deployed in the north of the country. So we've kind of got to a point now where I've been focusing on the rollout, you've been focusing on the data end, and now finally, for the last sort of year or so, we're together and have got to a point where we're starting to enable that digital energy by the rollout of smart meters, as well as bringing energy into the fold and actually accessing that data and making it available to others. So what I think would be great is just to talk a little bit about digital energy. Why is digital energy important for the country? And just to give it some scope, I guess, we heard figures at the end of last year that there are now near on 32 million smart and advanced meters across Great Britain, which seems a lot, but actually it's only about 55% of Great Britain's meter points that are smart and advanced meters. So we've got a long way to go as a country, but that clearly a massive marketplace for digital energy there now. And obviously continuing to roll out smart meters. I think last stats I saw was we're rolling out around 15,500 meters a day as an industry. So that number continues to go up, but with the marketplace we've got now, what is it creating? What is that digital energy?
I think it'd be useful to step back a little bit around digitization of the energy industry and where the energy industry has come from. So for the last 100 years, we've had electricity, we've had energy flowing through the network into homes and businesses. And that energy has normally been provided by fossil fuel generation. So coal power stations, gas power stations. And we can turn those generation facilities up and down on demand. We can add more coal to the fires, which generates more energy, which then services the demand for that energy, whether it's in the evening when demand is high or in the middle of the night when demand is low. So that's classically what we've been in a... we've increased supply to meet demand. We're now moving to a renewable world where we can't make the sun shine more brightly. We can't make the wind blow harder. So we have to be in a position now where we adjust demand or influence demand to meet the availability of supply. And that's where the data comes in. How do we know when energy is available? And how do we encourage people to use that low carbon renewable generated energy and avoid the uses of energy at times where we need to spin up coal power stations or increase the gas production? That's the whole point of digital energy. That's the whole point of smart meters. That's the whole point of digitizing the electricity grid. That's the whole point of creating batteries and intelligent devices to really balance that availability of energy through renewable generation and what we consume in our homes and businesses.
And that role of collecting energy data is different in this case, isn't it? Because you're not an energy supplier. So historically, energy suppliers have been in control of that data, right? Whether it's through meter readings or in the earlier rollouts of smart meters. So how is it that Energy and the company that you founded and is now part of SMS, how does it go and get that energy data? What role does it play?
So there are a couple of different roles. So there's an industry code called the Smart Energy Code. It's the regulation within the energy industry around smart meters and smart energy. So there's a couple of different user types for that. There's an energy supplier role within that code. There's a network operator role within that code. So those are the UKPNs and the UK Power Networks and the Western Power Grids and Northern Power Grids, people like that. And then there's a third role. And this third role has been relatively undefined over the last few years, but it's called other. It means that some other organization can access the smart meter data with the consumer's consent, with the occupant's consent, because it's personal data, this stuff. So that's the role energy plays, or energy as in the business I founded plays, is the ability to go into that meter with the consumer's consent to access that data and bring it to organizations that can bring value from it. So we've seen over the last couple of years, we've seen an explosion within the energy app market, the mobile phone app market. A couple of the large players like Loop and the Hugo Energy app, they are customers of the digital plumbing service, the energy digital plumbing service that the energy platform provides. And they can build value on top of that. So I'm sure many of the listeners and watchers of the podcast today is familiar with those apps. And maybe quite a lot of them have used the app. That app provides the data to make decisions on whether to use energy, to track their bills, to track their consumption, to move the behaviors to align with that renewable energy generation, which is now far cheaper than fossil fuel generation, as well as far more beneficial to the environment. So that's just one step, and that market is starting to increase exponentially. If we look at financial institutes wishing to offer green loans and mortgages or green home improvement activities, whether you want to buy a heat pump or improve your insulation or replace your double glazing, all these energy efficiency measures have to be funded, but they need to be funded in a way that encourages that green low-cost activity, which again is enabled by the data from the smart meter. That's how you measure the achievements. That's how you measurably reduce your bills and you reduce your carbon footprint as an end consumer.
I think that's a great example of how you can use it. Digital energy is I think it was progressed quicker perhaps because of the energy crisis, but actually came at the right time because the density of smart meters was increasing. At the time the energy crisis hit, we must have had near on 20 million smart meters around. And that was the first opportunity where we saw these free energy apps really start to show value to consumers and businesses. And that's great. I think what I'd like to do is just expand a little bit on how do we get the best out of digital energy. So for me, I think some great use cases there, free energy apps. I also think that actually we're starting to see other marketplaces that have never really been engaged in the energy industry, and it's kind of been left to the energy suppliers. I think other markets are now starting to recognize that they can access energy data, and for varying reasons. One could be for their own obligations, and they need to understand their and their mortgage book or their customers. They need to understand how they interact with energy. I think the other great use case is actually, it's a really powerful way to add another level of engagement to your customer base. One of the things that we've been working on at SMS is using energy insights as a way to engage with businesses and customers. So not just taking that raw data, but actually taking the energy data, providing a lot of insight and machine learning kind of activity that starts to build a picture of hints and tips and events and alerts and something that can proactively start to help consumers and businesses manage their own relationship with energy. Not just understand how much they're spending and what their bill is likely to be, but actually using it to drive some hints and tips and also recommendations. Because if we're in a scenario now where over the next 5-10 years, we're going to have to retrofit on an awful lot of buildings, both domestic and non-domestic, the source for that, I think, is twofold. One is engagement with the homeowner or the business owner, but also some real clear digital examples of the impact retrofitting energy solutions such as solar panels, batteries, heat pumps will actually do. So, you know, how can I know with any confidence what the impact of me getting a heat pump or solar panels or batteries installed at my house?
I think that's a really good point, bringing up the energy crisis. There was an Accenture survey probably about 10, 12 years ago, something like that. So quite a way in the past, about what is the relationship of a consumer, whether it's a business or residential, a consumer of energy, what is their relationship with their energy bill? And the results of the survey found that the average end user thought about their bill for 30 seconds a year. And that's basically, is it correct? Am I paying the right number? There was no engagement with energy, no interest or whatsoever. Obviously, that's changed over the last few years with climate change, decarbonization, net zero. But horrible as it's been, the energy crisis has probably engaged the most consumers, informed, educated the most consumers, obviously, mainly across Europe, specifically in the UK, we're talking about now. So the public awareness of energy and energy costs and decarbonisation is exponentially higher than it was maybe just 5 years ago. So we need to take advantage, horrible as it sounds, we need to take advantage of the awareness that's been created through the energy crisis and to build on that education, to build on that service, to provide these new services, as you've described, that uses the data on and the awareness of what's happening across the world in decarbonisation, across the world in climate change, to address climate change. And to drive the change forward. And obviously, the energy sector does what the energy sector does. It generates and distributes energy. But it's going to take a lot more than just the energy sector to embark on this change. And as you said, whether it's financial institutes, whether it's car manufacturers, whether it's heating and cooling manufacturers, whether it's the organizations and marketing services around that entire sector, all those organizations do have to get band together now, together with the energy sector, to drive the story forward, to drive the movement forward in reducing energy bills again, hopefully to pre-crisis levels, or maybe below pre-crisis levels, through intelligent use. And, you know, in order to intelligently use energy, you need that data, you need those smart meters, you need the availability of that data to make those decisions. You know, is a heat pump going to work for me? Are solar panels going to work for me? Because a simple example, if you work during the day and the house is completely empty and you sleep during the night and therefore not use energy during the day potentially, is just solar panels the right thing? Because solar panels will generate the energy day because it's sunlight and push it straight out to the grid. you don't get to use much or any of that energy. So solar panels and a battery might be better for you as an individual. But we need data to make that decision. We need data on consumption behaviors of the individuals to allow the right recommendations and the right assets and the right technology to be used to support that that scenario.
Completely agree. And I think whilst it makes absolute sense, it's not easy, is it? If we're honest, we are at a GB meter stock level. We're still only sort of 60% through. So that's a good 40% of the population that can't yet benefit from digital energy. But even those that that have a smart meter installed already or an advanced meter, actually tapping into that energy data is difficult. And a lot of the work that you did in the lead up to energy going live, and then since actually SMS has acquired energy, the continued work we're always doing to get the highest level of performance we can out of these meters is really difficult, isn't it? As well as the compliance and the regulatory obligation we've got.
Yeah, absolutely. The Smart Energy Code is about 12,000 pages long, but it's 10 million words. It's an enormous document and it's complicated. The smart meter rollout has had its challenges and had its delay, but it's fundamental to what we need to do next. So whatever we can do, we do need to do, whether it's to expose the data from the smart meter services with consent, I always have to add that, of the end user, to the new services and the new decisions to be made. The rollout of the smart meters has been challenging. There's been difficulties. You know, the smart meters are a complex beat that do need maintaining. They do need a proper operational service and focus and upgrading and monitoring. And that's something that we're starting to look at addressing through the combination of energy and the SMS knowledge and asset base. So how do we maintain this network? Because these meters need to be on the wall for 15 plus years. They need to be providing data for 15 plus years to allow us to decarbonize, to enable the movement towards a net zero society. And that's fundamentally essential to the energy industry going forward, and fundamentally essential to all the innovators, whether they're corporate, financial institutes, device manufacturers, service providers, all those institutes that rely on this data to make a difference, to make the right decisions. If the data's not there, then the right decisions can't be made.
And it's incredibly secure as well, isn't it? Which is great in one sense, but also means that it is difficult. It's difficult for energy suppliers, it's difficult for meter manufacturers, it's difficult for us to go and speak to these meters. Whilst the deployment is also ongoing, the meters are always evolving. The network is always evolving at the DCC end as well as the meter end and everything in between. So whether it's operational, when I was actually working at the meter manufacturer, we always used to refer to them as mini computers. These are not meters anymore. The metering aspect is about 10% of its capability. They're incredibly secure. And I always remember getting the first wave of smart meters and the communication hubs assured. They actually have to go through GCHQ, don't they? Or what was GCHQ for the security level. So this is an incredibly secure and complex ecosystem that digital energy is being created off the back of it, which is great for consumers, for businesses to have that sense of security. And I think the next challenge that businesses with either customers or using it for their own purpose has is that level of engagement and trust that they have to win, that me as a homeowner is going to consent to my data being given for the right reason. And that's where I think you've got to show the value you get back, isn't it? You can't just show back the how much you're spending. You've got to provide all of these additional services on top of it, whether it's modeling retrofit solutions or whether it's insights and hints and tips and stuff like that. So I always need a value back in return for giving the data, which is really important. And I think one of the other use cases that is probably relatively untapped still at a domestic level, certainly, is flexibility. We know that how important flexibility is. You touched on it earlier that actually, as a country, as we start to electrify heat and transport, that level of generation we need is going to either have to go up a lot or it's going to have to increase an awful amount of flexibility. Across the industry, we talk about a target of introducing 30 gigawatts of flexibility into the system by 2030, which is really, really significant challenge. Digital energy is absolutely key to that. So the rollout of smart meters is key to that. And then people like SMS and Energy that are enabling innovators and other brands out there to tap into that energy data is key, because without that data, you can't have that level of flexibility, because you can't incentivize a consumer or a business to change the behavior of when they use energy. But equally, from a control point of view, you can't equally control assets at the right time without understanding the level of data that you're going and energy data that that's going to free up for flexibility. And DFS, so National Grid's Demand Flexibility Service, has been a great example of that. And really, I think probably the first point across the smart meter rollout where it got used for something other than giving accurate bills, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So there's a couple of points. So I think it'd be useful to understand what DFS is, what demand flexibility is in that context. So we are electrifying everything, basically. We're electrifying transport, we're electrifying heat, we're electrifying cooling, we're electrifying anything that uses natural gas or petroleum or anything like that. We're in the process of electrifying. Our grids, our networks, and our generation capabilities have been designed for a certain amount of demand. And actually, over the last 20 years, that demand's gone down. So if you think about energy appliance labeling, the A to G factors of your new washing machine or tumble dryer, devices have become more efficient. So as devices have changed, been replaced over the last 20 years, they use less energy. Therefore, the overall demand has come down. But now we're at the start, or slightly beyond the start, of electrification journey. So the average electric vehicle will consume the same amount as a house throughout the year. Heating and cooling consumes half your home energy demand. That's currently done by gas for most homes. Tomorrow, they'll be done by electricity. So the demand on the electricity network is tripling, basically. How do we manage that demand without digging up every road, replacing every pylon in the country? It's about balancing the system. And that's exactly what the demand flexibility service that was introduced by National Grid last winter is there to do, is to try and, when there's a shortfall in generation but a massive demand, how do we reduce that demand rather than try and find more generation? As I said before, we can't make the sun shine on demand, we can't make the wind blow on demand, so there has to be a balance. And that's what the DFS service, I think 10 million events were participated in last winter, and I suspect this winter we'll have many more. Unfortunately, we missed the opportunity in the summer because the DFS events were paused over the summer. So we did, as a nation, start numerous coal power stations through the hot snap, as more and more air conditioning units were switched on, which caused us to turn on coal power stations in the middle of summer. Sounds crazy, but that's what happened. So this time round, I believe, as we launch DFS this winter, it'll roll through winter and summer and winter to come, allowing us to avoid those high demand periods, which will avoid us to turn on coal power stations or increase gas-generated energy going forward. Fundamental service. But back to the other point you made around about security of the network. So I joined energy industry and the smart meter program probably a year after GCHQ, who are now sort of known as the National Cybersecurity Center, so the cybersecurity part of government, had just effectively delayed the program by a year because they did a full review on security of smart meters and made some significant changes to the security architecture. So smart meters today are very, very secure. And yes, we're talking about national security of energy. Therefore, they have to be. And there's enormous amount of technical, commercial, legislative, and regulatory code around that, which makes them more complex, but makes them secure as well.
I think that's fundamental to customer engagement as well, isn't it? For a long time, I guess consumers have not really trusted energy so much, whether that's the fault of the energy suppliers or costs. It's been a pretty touchy subject for most, and heightened by the energy crisis as well. So I think that assurance of security is really key. And as with energy as well, the security of consent and privacy models as well that we have is really important.
Just touching on that point then, yes, there's been plenty of stories in the press over many years around energy suppliers getting their bills wrong, you know, overcharging, undercharging, you know, various quite sad stories. But if you think about what now smart meters and smart meter data introduces, and there's a couple of services already on the market, there's a bill validation. So you can go to an independent organization to check, and it's free of charge. It's provided through some of these app services to see, you know, my energy company has charged me X. Can you, app provider, go to my meter, get my data, calculate my bill to see if it's correct? So through this innovation, through this opening of the data within the smart meter, we're starting to see innovative services not just create value to the end customer, to create service, to create benefit, to reduce carbon, to reduce costs, but also to increase trust within the industry, to increase validation of, I am being charged the right amount, I am using energy in the right place, and I'm having that information independently validated, which can only help the industry and can only help the consumer in their journey to lower energy bills and decarbonisation.
I think that's a great example, actually. And one of the key stats that I always call upon was a study that one of our technology partners, Elique, did. So this was a study done across millions of users that had a traditional app where it may have just been a PDF of your bill once a month or something like that, and perhaps a chat service. And what they found was actually when you started to plug energy data into that app and added the energy insights that they provide into that app, the level of engagement with that customer base went from using the app once a month to seven times a month. And actually the time spent went from an average of 60 seconds to well over 6 minutes a month. So as well as the level of engagement that you get, clearly customers and consumers are starting to get more engaged in it and understand where their energy spend is and how they're spending it. But also just by that understanding of where their energy was spent, those customers on average as well saved 7% of their energy. And that's not, I worked out that I needed to go and get some insulation fitted. That's just behavioral-led change. A great example at my own house, I worked out that my immersion heater was coming on at 2 o'clock in the morning for an hour. No idea why, but sorted that out, and it's reduced my bill quite significantly. So understanding and tapping into that level of engagement with energy insights has a huge impact on the consumer's spend of energy as well. And obviously 7% of the energy bills today is quite a saving compared to what it was 3-4 years ago.
I've got numerous examples. I'll just give one. So one of the customers of the energy platform, I think it was their chief commercial officer, wasn't really from the energy industry, didn't really understand. So we're just chatting through things. And I was explaining, you know, how the insight to the data and the various apps on the market and services on the market and how to use that. That's now built into the app. But effectively, what he did was wander around his home looking at the data within the app and looking at what was happening in his home. And there's a couple of things he discovered. One was that 35-minute shower by his oldest daughter cost a lot more than he thought. The other thing was, I think it was a halogen light that basically he switched on at night to light up his garden. And it was left on for 8 hours overnight. And just by replacing that light with an LED and putting a time switch on it, you know, relatively simple, you know, started reducing his energy bill significantly. And it's really around the data is there to guide you as an individual or someone you've asked to help you as an individual to understand what your behaviors are and the behavior, and it's as much as about the behaviors you've forgotten. So I leave my light switched on all night, and that's actually costing £150 a year. You know, just switch it off or replace it with an LED bulb, which is, you know, 1%, 3% of the cost of the halogen bulb he was using. So there's it's Data and information is empowerment. You can make decisions based on the data you have. And that's absolutely what we're trying to do, is to empower people. You know, whether it's empowering people as individuals to look at what they do, look at what their household does, and subtly change that behavior because they know what's going on, or to empower organizations they trust to help them make those changes and make those activities. And it might be as simple as, you know, switching the emergent heater off, or buying a more efficient one, or putting some insulation on it. Very, very simple, low-cost changes can make massive differences in terms of energy cost and consumption.
I think it's probably worth just touching on in-home displays as well, because lots of the people that will be listening to this that may have had a smart meter installed would have been given, if they're a domestic customer, would have been given an in-home display. And that is a use of digital energy, of course, and it's live. So really useful, gives you that live view at a 10-second granularity of what is going on in the home at any one time. But I guess what is different about what we're talking about today, which is that digital energy, is making it available historically in the palm of your hands. And just to build on that a little bit more, smart meters are actually capable of getting 30 months worth of half hourly data. So really, really powerful way of not just having that live view in the kitchen or wherever your in-home display is, but actually being able to sit down and spend some time wherever you are, whether you're in the pub, at the park, wherever you are, you can see that historical view and what builds up that insights and the trend to understand it at that extra level. I think that's the jump that we've really seen, that IHDs play a really significant role. And one of the roles they play is that consent journey, isn't it? So lots of users that would have gone through a journey to download one of these energy apps would have used their in-home display as a form to grant consent and prove that they are authorized to actually give consent for that data. But actually the power of that historical data, as well as all of the innovation that companies are throwing on top of that with AI, machine learning, and all sorts, that's where you kind of jump up a scale from that live view into, I've got it in the palm of my hands. I can see what happened last month. I can see how my month is compared to last month's, last year even. And that's really powerful.
Absolutely. Looking at that trend over short periods and long periods is absolutely essential. Now, having that 13 months of data, so 13 months will cover a full winter season and a full summer season, depending on what order you look at it in. And obviously, you can collect it for longer to look at the long-term changes in behavior you make and the long-term benefits those achieve. Just touching on the in-home display. So the first day, I can't remember when it was now, I got an in-home display. I was obviously interested using it, wandering around the house, seeing what happens. And my son has an old Xbox, Xbox 360, so one of the early generations. And so he was playing the game, and I was thinking, well, that's quite a lot of energy that thing's using. And then he finished, and he switched it on to standby. And it didn't change. And this thing was sat on standby 24 hours a day, other than the couple of hours a day he was gaming. And it still consumed half a kilowatt, and half kilowatts, not an insignificant amount of energy. So yeah, just brief conversation. If you finish playing, switch it off of the wall. Significant reduction in his energy, significant reduction in cost. So simple behaviors like that. And that the in-home display enabled that identity to identify that, I think they're called vampire devices. Now, modern devices are better, but this was quite an old device. And to do something about it, and it's just a simple change of behavior. Switch it off the wall when you're done, everything's fine. Updates take longer now, but anyway.
I think that's a great example of the live use. I think what's going to be the big shift over the next couple of years for me is the type of companies engaging with energy. So we talked about it earlier that it's not just for energy suppliers now, and that you and I spend most of our time talking to companies that are not energy suppliers and have never really touched the energy industry. So just to build on that a little bit, the creation of the other user role done years ago is really starting to show its value now and enable other marketplaces to start to come in and use energy as a way to engage with their customers. And just to build on that a little bit, I think it would be worth just laying out some future scenarios that I see. So I think one day if I'm going to buy a house, for example, I should be able to scroll down if I'm going to buy or rent a house and see actually how much does it really cost to run that house. And I think what's powerful beyond that is, and what is the data recommending I could do with that house if I brought it? So how do I buy a house and or rent a house knowing the cost it's going to realistically cost me to run it? But also what retrofit solutions could I do to that house? And if you can find a way, if brands, whether it's the property market, mortgage books, could find a way to engage with me and show me digitally how I could retrofit that house, the impact it will have to my energy bills, and actually the impact it could have on the value of the house as well. I think that's a great example of what digital energy is going to do over the coming years. And local authorities as well, as we know, have got a real significant challenge on their hands to retrofit the houses and buildings in their areas. And I think this is something we're working with one local authority already, is can they actually use an Energy Insights app and a platform to be able to engage at that level with the residents and the landlords in their area, social housing as well. I think it is a completely untapped area at the moment and something that we're really committed to exploring with all of those different markets, house builders as well. When a house builder, when they hand a building over to homeowners or to social landlords, how do they know that what they have marketed and said that they're building them a set of really efficient houses? How do you know? Can you use digital energy beyond the build to engage with the new house owners to show that actually, yes, thank you, you have built me an efficient house. And equally as well, how do you improve on it? Where can you use that data to drive more changes?
I think that's the real crux of that. So I've been making some noise over the recent months, maybe a year. We see the smart meter ads on TV and social media around more accurate bills and things like that. I'm of the opinion that meter data has got very little to do with bills now. Meter data, yes, we've got smart meters. We can get more accurate bills. That's an internal industry thing, an efficiency thing inside the industry. The data is far more valuable than that. And as I say, if you're a social landlord, how do you understand the behavior of your housing stock? And not just the theoretical behavior of your housing stock as EPC data provides the sort of A to F rating for homes, but also how are they actually used? That's what the data within the meter explains. It's sort of, you know, it indicates the efficiency of the home, the efficiency of the devices without people. And then when you add people, that's where really comes the smart meter data comes in. So yes, you can use the data to identify which parts of a social housing portfolio needs to be addressed. They need fabric improvements. They need process improvements. They need activities around that. But equally, and just as important, it's about education and human behavior. So, you know, if an individual tenant switches the heating on and on a cold day and leaves all the windows open, that's not good behavior. That's going to cost a lot of money. That's going to use a lot of energy. So it's a balance between actions from a physical perspective and actions from an educational and encouragement perspective. And both those actions can be determined through the data within the meter, but also the resolution. So the you know, whether those interventions worked can be determined through that data as well. So I'll give you an example of that. So the meter holds 13 months of data. So if you're an individual or a landlord, doesn't really matter. But if you're an individual looking to improve a property, you can look back at the performance of that property. So you don't have to have any monitoring or any systems in place over a period of time. You can just simply look at go to the meter, get the data out of the meter with the occupant's consent. I keep adding that. Get the data out of the meter. And you can look at the performance of the building historically. Then you can maybe the next day or the next week or the next month install insulation improvements, install heat pump improvement, educate the occupant on the things they're doing and the things they may not be doing on the use of energy. And then you can measure that going forward. So you have the old data and the new data, but you don't have to a limited degree, you don't have to plan 12 months in advance what you're going to do. You don't have to gather that data in advance of your action. You can gather that data because it's always in the meter. It's just there. 13 months, get it when you can, get it when you want to do something. And then you can make the change. Then you can measure the change. And if the change works, great. You can start replicating that into the other homes. If the change doesn't work, then you have immediate feedback. And you can optimize the change, modify the change, improve the change, improve your engagement, improve the assets you install. Maybe you identify things that you don't need to install. They didn't achieve what they wanted to. So you spend that money on something else, something more valuable that achieves better results. It all comes through the data. The data is fundamental to every single thing we have to do and we must do to reduce bills, to reduce carbon, to battle climate change.
I think just building on that, one of the things that's still relatively untapped is how introducing energy smart appliances such as batteries, solar panels, heat pumps and stuff like that is great. If I take my house, for example, I'm on a standard variable tariff at the moment, and I will absolutely get a benefit if I start to install solar panels, batteries and heat pumps and stuff. But I think the trick is that actually with energy data post the install, there is also a massive opportunity then to reassess that tariff because all of a sudden my profile of energy consumption is completely different. The way I use energy in the home is the same, but actually I've got a new opportunity now of starting to pull from grid at different times with the control of the batteries. And I've got tied to your example earlier about a family going out. In my house, there's always somebody at home. So whilst I may not benefit from a battery because the consumption is likely to be used straight away, actually introducing the battery allows me for more flexibility. But without that energy data, I don't have the ability to understand the new appropriate tariff I should be on. And I don't have that level of engagement and advice from whatever it is, an energy app, the OEMs that produce and install or the installation partner for the battery and solar system. I think that's still relatively untapped, and time of use tariffs at the moment are still relatively new. There are some energy suppliers that are far more progressive than others. But I think as the country transitions to more eco-friendly homes with heat pumps and PV and battery and things, that need for time of use tariffs is going to go up. And I think what is still relatively untapped is combining that level of flexibility of the assets with the time of use tariffs.
That's a really interesting point. You know, you mentioned there's always someone at home, so it doesn't give you much. Well, depends how you design the system. So if you have a battery, then yes, if there's always someone at home and you're always consuming energy, then that's one thing. And there'll be peaks and troughs that you can use the battery to avoid those periods. But the battery plus solar, you know, I would imagine that even though there's always someone at home, your energy consumption throughout the day will be lower than your energy consumption after the kids come home from school or after you come home from work. That will be a peak because you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're the washing maybe and all those activities. So the generation from the solar, maybe use 20% of it in the home in real time. Maybe the rest of it goes into the battery. All of a sudden now you can carry yourself through that high demand, high cost period of the evening off the battery, significantly reducing your bill. But as you said, tariffs are fundamental to that decision. So, you know, back to that study that was done 10 years ago or so. You know, we treat energy as a cost. We have a flat rate. I think it's 40-50p a kilowatt hour at the moment, regardless of when you use it. It's incredible because if you look at the underlying price of that energy, yes, it varies widely and can vary widely throughout the day, month, week, year. But ultimately, the individual cost, if you can do something about your consumption, a flat rate tariff is not the right answer for the vast majority of people. There is an opportunity for everyone to save by going on some sort of changing tariff. And then it's about confidence. The market, the energy supplier market, doesn't offer these complex tariffs today, or the vast majority don't offer these complex tariffs today, because they don't know how to engage with the consumer. And that's something, you know, as an entire industry needs to figure out. Maybe it's through devices automatically following the tariff. Maybe it's through education. Maybe it's through people trying and experiencing that in a sort of safe environment. But something has to be done, because the wholesale market of energy is run on a half-hour price signal. Every 30 minutes, the wholesale price changes. So today, classically, overnight, the price of energy could be 2-3 pence a kilowatt hour, which is 10 times lower than, you know, your fixed tariff. During the day, it's typically 30% lower than the average fixed tariff. And then in the evening, that high demand period, it goes up. So if you could do things to avoid consuming energy in that high cost period, and that high cost period will probably probably change over time, and I'll explain why in a second, then you could save money just by going on a more variable tariff, whether that's what traditionally called the Economy 7 or the Economy 10 tariff, whether that's a marking tracking tariff, whether there's an EV tracking tariff. There's multiple of these tariffs, which is one of the challenges, because it's complicated. There's too many options. How do we help consumers through that decision process? And again, back to data and how to understand the typical behaviors of consumers, and then recommend, well, an EV, you might not have an EV, but an EV tariff might be better for you because you consume a lot of energy overnight. You have storage heaters, maybe. You have a car that you want to charge. I sort of just referenced in passing the highest cost, highest demand period being the evening, because everybody comes home from work, kids come home from school, we start cooking, we're cleaning, washing, et cetera, et cetera. And referring back earlier to the reference I made around electric vehicles consuming as much energy as a house does, typically average mileage, average house, throughout the year. So today we have, I think it's 3-4% of cars aren't electric cars on the road. When those cars charge, they consume 10 times the amount of energy as the house. So it's not long of, it doesn't need many more cars on the road charging overnight, charging between midnight and 6 a.m., let's say, to actually dwarf the demand of a typical home during the high cost, the high peak period. Because if we get about 15% of the population driving cars, then overnight, if everybody charges their car overnight, becomes a high cost period, high demand period. So we need to build this intelligence into the assets. We need to build this data into the assets we're deploying in order to, when overnight becomes a high cost period potentially, then cars can start changing their demand profile to say, I'll charge for the afternoon now because there's plenty of solar energy, or I charge on a windy day, or I charge on a different time. It's incredibly complicated, but it's something we have to engage front on. And as an industry, and not just as an industry, but as an entire society, whether it's car manufacturers, whether it's heat pump manufacturers, whether it's your energy supplier, whether it's National Grid, we all need to come together as a common story of education and service to enable people to be confident to move to these other tariffs, to enable people to move to these tariffs to save money and to effectively save the grid, and to save generation facilities as well.
Just to build on that a little bit more, there is going to be a difference of people that are like you and I. We're kind of tech and energy geeks, aren't we, really? So I can imagine a scenario if we had batteries and EV chargers and stuff, we would like to have a little bit of control over aligning the use of those to our tariffs. The challenge, I think, is that the price points of a time of use tariff may not be enough to completely change the behavior of how households and businesses use energy. So there is absolutely, for me, a place for control of assets. And I think the challenge there is, how do you engage a customer enough through digital energy to show the customer that if you did hand over control or a degree of control of those assets, whether it's a battery, then is that going to increase the amount of flexibility the grid gets and the benefit that the consumer gets? And I think there is going to be a real split, which is yet unknown. At the moment, a lot of the early adopters of these energy smart appliances have been tech geeks and people that can afford to pay. So there is going to be a real shift over time where the wider population starts to have access to heat pumps because of government grants and heat pumps, price of heat pumps coming down and things. How do you engage them enough to make that choice as to whether they are going to proactively go and change how they use energy because of a cost saving and a maybe a wish to help the grid green, or whether actually they do need to hand over control to a flexibility provider, and that could be through their energy supplier or it could be another flexibility provider. There is going to be a real shift. There's lots of work being done through some government-funded projects and new sets of compliance and policies around controlling these assets so that they are controlled with the customer's benefit at the forefront. And that's something that is going to be really interesting over the coming years. So I think one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit more is just what's next. So we talked about lots of early movers, and you know, the banking world and property markets and stuff like that, house builders. But what's next? I think for me, we're at a point where you and I talk a lot about how we want to make the platform available to innovators. And there is an unknown amount that can still be done with digital energy and energy data. It's not just for the energy suppliers, as we've been talking about. And there are lots of startups starting to appear now that we're talking to that want to use it for other things. What do you think's next?
It's a really interesting question. And I've spent the last 5 years working with startups, and I'm continually surprised at the innovation that's happening within the industry, the wider industry, people wanting to get involved and help the market forward and help innovation and drive decarbonization. So there's going to be a massive focus on carbon from a regulatory perspective, whether it's the primary carbon footprint of businesses and homes, whether it's the tertiary carbon footprint of banks on their mortgage books and things like that. There's an entire new activity around carbon. And data supports that activity, absolutely. The other principle is around, back to the way I explained the way generation, demand and supply works, or supply and demand, depending on you, that we're now needing to match demand with the availability of supply. So assets become incredibly more important. It's not just about, I sell you a kilowatt hour as an energy provider, and it's going to be the same whatever time you think about it. But it's about how do those assets participate in that energy system? And I see the assets fall into two different categories. You have pure energy assets, like a battery is a pure energy asset. Whether it's fully charged or discharged, it doesn't affect your daily life. It doesn't affect whether you go to work in the morning. It doesn't affect whether you have hot water. So it's a purely energy industry assets that can be controlled to minimize cost, to minimize the impact of the grid, to maximize renewable generation. But there are a lot of other assets, like a heat pump, like a car and the car charger. You know, by overly controlling that, by getting that wrong, you impact the consumer's daily life. So how do we get that right? And that's an enormous amount of work to be done. That's an enormous amount of experience. I draw a parallel with Tesla and autonomous driving. So if you think about Tesla today, they have, I think it's 6 million cars plus on the road. And every single car is recording, processing, learning, which all gets shipped back to a central system to improve their autonomous driving software and their autonomous driving AI. We do need something similar in the energy industry where we can learn from behaviors and actions and experience with objective feedback and subjective feedback. So the system becomes more intelligent. So we can control assets, influence assets, encourage behavior in a way that doesn't compromise the individual's life. Because ultimately, if you think about an individual, they buy a product for what that product does. They buy a car to drive to work or for recreation. They buy a heat pump to keep warm. They buy a kettle to make tea. They don't buy any product to consume energy. That's not the primary purpose of anything you buy. It's a side effect of what we buy. So the behavior has to be around not disrupting or ultimately improving that relationship between the end consumer and their product, and doing so in a way that supports the energy industry initiatives, to support decarbonization, supports flexibility, supports balancing the system between supply and demand. And that's the real next big challenge, I think, is how is that evolution or even war fought out between maybe the energy industry and device manufacturers, and what model takes control. One of the early strap lines of the energy business was taking energy from blockbusters to Netflix. I still absolutely believe in it, and we can see it happening in the industry today, is the old industry of the I'll send you a bill each month and it'll be roughly right and it'll average out through the year and everything's fine, to a model which is actually engaging for consumers that benefit the consumer's life at a better price point, at a lower carbon footprint. That's absolutely what's happening. And we see rumors of other players coming into the energy market with significant amounts of assets that they already understand to a degree how to control, effectively without detriment in the consumer, but benefit in the consumer. You know, what's going to happen to the market at the moment? But it's an incredibly exciting time in the market where the system is fundamentally revolutionizing, and that means there'll be winners and losers, but they'll all need data and they'll all need help in the decision to be made.
I actually think that one of the areas that needs a bit more focus on from some innovators and maybe existing players that are there is the SME market. So I think you touched on AI then, and for the last few years, we've seen energy insights providers use data disaggregation, anonymized half-hourly data from smart meters against a profile of a house. And that's relatively easy to do, isn't it? You have a set amount of different houses. Could be a flat, a house, a semi-detached and a detached. It could have 2 to 5 bedrooms, and you can quite easily build up a picture of the profile of a house and a user and a family. And that feeds an engine that starts to give you some analysis using machine learning and AI, where these providers can start to show some data disaggregation. And there's a lot of apps out there now that will show you an estimate of where I spent my energy. So I spent 30% on cooking and 20% on washing and things like that. That works relatively well, and it's a great tool to engage customers and inform and actually also gamify it a little bit. We're starting to see some of the innovators in this space start to gamify that energy, where you can kind of opt into hints and tips. And if you accept a tip and it sees that you're actually reducing energy based on that tip, you can win some points and things like that. And they could lead up to Amazon vouchers and all these great things. But to do that and replicate that great innovation over the last few years in the SME market and the non-domestic market is really difficult, because you pick a small business, a cafe, for example, or a hairdresser is probably a good example. At that level, you've got no idea whether it's two chaps cutting hair with scissors or whether it's a 10-seat hair salon with hair dryers and all sorts. So understanding the profile of the business in the non-domestic world is really difficult, because the use of energy, as well as the ability of that company to control how they use it. I don't think we're going to get to a point where restaurants start to turn the ovens off at 5 o'clock to opt into DFS or to help the grid and things like that. So there is definitely a lot of focus, I think, that needs to be done from those kind of innovators and some startups in that market. Something that we're really focused on, into the non-domestic space as to how we start to build up the same sort of capability we've got in the domestic space into the SME market and engaging them through energy insights more as well. So that's one area, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. If you look at, there is such a thing as an average home. There is such a thing of an average consumption curve. Ofgem's been publishing it for years. The vast majority of homes roughly align with some of those models. You know, with a bit of technology, with new assets, they started to change now. But it's, you know, there is an average home. You know, homes go through cycle. There's a rush hour because people go to work. There's a rush hour evening because people come home from work and they have tea and they watch TV and they play Xbox and things like that in the evening. So there is a rough model for a residential property. The commercial properties are very different. You know, your average fish and chip shop is different from your average hair salon, which is different from your factory, which is different from your commercial office block. The distribution and complexity of commercial establishments, let's call it, whether it's SME or larger, is massive. There's no correlation between, there's no average commercial property. And the challenge there is how do you then determine what to do? How do you then understand what's happening there and what actions you can take and things like that? Again, it's all about data. You know, with the residential market, you can segment based on a behavioral model. You can't do that. You have to go to the data. You have to go to the meter that's there. Hopefully it's a smart or a advanced meter, not a dumb meter, to get the data, to understand the behaviors, then to correlate with maybe a similar businesses across the country. Because in any one geographical area, you might have 1,000 properties and two hairdressers. You can't correlate with just the two. You have to spread your map wider than that, to understand opportunities, to understand where you can change behavior, to understand where you can apply assets, where you can apply improvements, where you can take action to reduce the carbon footprint. And similarly, as we saw with the recent energy crisis, typically businesses don't benefit from the safeguards that the residential consumers benefit from. So they're exposed with a far greater downside if they don't engage and if they don't understand, if they don't take the data, if they don't get the help, then their energy bill will continue to rise, which will cause them to raise costs, which may cause them to go out of business or may annoy their customer base, which will allow them to lose business. But it costs society more as a whole, because the SMEs are part of the local society, part of the local economy, and them losing, you know, going out of business or raising their costs will impact the local economy. And we need to try and avoid that. And that's without even touching upon carbon neutrality and climate change. It's just about local economies and how do we improve and support that. So there's 1,000 different moving parts to this, and it's just how do we navigate through them and support innovators and support processes going forward that enables this change in a way that is economically efficient and environmentally efficient. Those are the two things that are fundamental.
So we touched on how digital energy is the foundation for an awful lot. Innovation is one thing. I think that education is another thing. So we'll touch on this more in a later podcast, but we, about a year ago now, did a deal where we partnered with My Utility Genius for a energy in schools product. And that literally is the ask of that product was to find a way to promote smart meters, smart energy data to children in schools. It's a very, very simple solution, to be honest, where we enable teachers and children to understand the energy usage of the school, but also give them loads of lesson plans to teach them about energy, what is digital energy, what is climate change and all of that kind of stuff, and a lot of more tech that helps them to understand how the school is performing. Using that energy data, as well as some other IoT equipment, how do you understand how you take the school on its own climate action plan, which schools have to go through now? Education, I think, is absolutely key. You want to get to a point where children are going home to mums and dads saying, why have we not got a smart meter? Did you know you can do all of this kind of stuff with it? And then actually, through digital energy and solutions such as energy in schools, you can actually enable children to go and build their own climate action plans for the school. You can take some of this kit, you can blue tack it to a teacher's kettle and start to understand what the carbon intensity of the grid is at that time that a teacher boiled the kettle. And did you know, miss, that actually you've turned that kettle on when the grid was 40% on coal, powered by coal? So a great way of using digital energy to engage in children and the next generation that ultimately, if we're honest, are going to have an awful lot to do when they get into their jobs and start to go through their careers, energy is going to be so fundamental to them, whatever they do in their career. So that's something that we're really passionate about. And as I said, we'll touch on it on another podcast, but education is massive, isn't it?
I think, you know, why are we doing all of this? It's the future. It's you know, the sustainability of human life on this planet. Now, the planet's going to survive. You know, if we destroy the climate, the planet's going to survive. It's just humanity's gone. So the whole point is to improve the planet, save the planet for the next human generations, and that's kids. You know, kids are like sponge. They soak up this information, their knowledge, and they repeat this. So taking, as you say, taking this knowledge that they learn in school home to their parents, educating the older generation, you know, old gits like me, and to understand, you know, why should we change our behaviors? Why should we do something? Why should we have a smart meter? It's about, you know, immediate economic gain for the family, but it's also the long-term future of humanity. And that's fundamental. There's been so many bad examples of the past of sort of marketing to kids at Christmas time to buy a certain toy. You know, why don't we use those principles for good, for their future, for the environment? It's only positive in my mind. And the program we've been doing in schools is absolutely fundamental to driving this generational change. Because a lot of these changes will have to come from a generational change perspective, rather than just changing behaviors today, because people don't change quickly, but kids can force that change incredibly effectively.
Well, I've really enjoyed this chat today. I mean, you and I could talk for hours about this sort of stuff. But thanks, Matt. Really appreciate it.
It's great. And thank you, Tom.
Hi, it's Tom again. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you'd like to hear more from energy experts and innovators, please like, follow, and subscribe to Energy Matters podcast.